Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present St. Kitts and Nevis, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 1. Origins and First Inhabitants. Before the first European sails appeared on the horizon, St. Kitts and Nevis were thriving, interconnected ecosystems inhabited by the Kalinago people, also known as the Caribs. These indigenous inhabitants had cultivated a sustainable and intricate way of life, harmonizing with the island's lush tropical environment. Their culture, traditions, and resilience tell a story of human ingenuity and survival in an age untouched by modernity. The ancient names, Lyamwiga and Wali. The Kalinago referred to St. Kitts as Lyamwiga, meaning fertile land, a testament to its rich volcanic soil and abundant natural resources. The island's towering central peak, Mount Lyamwiga, loomed large in both geography and mythology. To the Kalinago, this mountain was sacred, a symbol of life, renewal, and the cycles of the natural world. Across the narrows, a shallow stretch of sea separating the two islands, lay Wali, or Land of Beautiful Waters. The crystalline streams of Nevis and its coral-rich coasts provided ample sustenance, offering a complementary landscape to its sister island. Together, these islands formed a sanctuary for the Kalinago people, who lived in villages scattered across the fertile coastal plains. The Kalinago way of life. The Kalinago were adept at thriving in their environment, employing sustainable agricultural practices to grow staple crops like cassava, sweet potatoes, yams, and maize. They used slash-and-burn techniques to clear patches of land while preserving the surrounding forest's biodiversity. Farming was primarily the work of women, who also wove intricate baskets, crafted pottery, and prepared meals for their families. Men, on the other hand, hunted wild game, fished in dugout canoes, and served as warriors to protect their communities. Kalinago canoes, known as piragas, were engineering marvels, often large enough to carry dozens of men on long voyages across the open sea. These vessels symbolized both their navigational prowess and their role in regional trade and diplomacy. Children were raised within a communal system, learning survival skills and tribal lore through observation and storytelling. Elders, considered the keepers of wisdom, passed down oral histories and myths that connected the Kalinago to their ancestors, the land, and the spiritual forces that governed their lives. Spiritual beliefs and sacred rituals. The Kalinago viewed the world as a delicate balance of natural and spiritual forces. Everything, from the smallest insect to the tallest tree, was thought to contain Manitou, a vital spiritual essence. To maintain harmony with these forces, the Kalinago engaged in rituals led by shamans, who acted as mediators between the human and spiritual worlds. Mount Lyamwiga, with its cloud-shrouded peak, was believed to house a powerful spirit responsible for the island's fertility. Rituals at the base of the mountain involved offerings of food, crafted ornaments, and dances to honor this spirit. These ceremonies reinforced the Kalinago's connection to their land and ensured its continued blessings. Trade and regional influence. The Kalinago were not isolated but part of a broader network of Caribbean indigenous cultures. They engaged in trade with neighboring islands, exchanging pottery, tools, and decorative items. These exchanges fostered cultural diffusion but also competition. Skirmishes over resources and territory were common, and the Kalinago earned a reputation as fierce warriors who protected their lands with unwavering resolve. Despite occasional conflicts, the Kalinago thrived on St. Kitts and Nevis for centuries. However, as the 15th century drew to a close, a new challenge loomed on the horizon, one that would disrupt their way of life forever. Chapter 2. Encounter and Collision. The Arrival of Europeans. The Caribbean's calm seas and untouched islands began to bear witness to an unprecedented upheaval in the late 15th century. Driven by the promise of riches and new territories, European explorers charted the region, marking the beginning of an era that would irrevocably change the lives of the Kalinago and the fate of St. Kitts and Nevis. The first sightings. In 1493, during his second voyage across the Atlantic, Christopher Columbus sailed through the Caribbean. Though he did not set foot on St. Kitts or Nevis, his observations and those of his crew ignited European interest in these islands. To Columbus, the Caribbean represented untold potential, fertile lands, exotic resources, and an untapped labor force. Columbus named the islands he encountered after saints, kings, and elements of the natural world. St. Kitts was christened San Cristobal, in honor of St. Christopher, the patron saint of travelers. Nevis, named Nuestra Señora de las Nieves, Our Lady of the Snows, referenced the perpetual mist that clung to its central mountain. The Kalinago, however, had a different perspective. The arrival of European ships stirred fear and uncertainty. Stories of pale-skinned men with strange weapons began to circulate among the islands, painting these newcomers as both mysterious and dangerous. The settlers arrive. More than a century after Columbus's initial voyage, the English and French turned their attention to colonizing St. Kitts and Nevis. In 1623, Sir Thomas Warner, an English explorer, landed on St. Kitts with a small group of settlers. They established a colony at Old Road Bay, drawn by the island's fertile soil and strategic location. The French soon followed. In 1625, Pierre Bellendiez Nambuc arrived with his own settlers, forging a tenuous alliance with Warner. The two groups agreed to co-colonize St. Kitts, dividing the land into English and French territories. Nevis, with its abundant fresh water and fertile plains, was claimed by the English in 1628. The Kalinago Massacre. The settlers' arrival disrupted the Kalinago way of life. Tensions over land and resources quickly escalated, culminating in one of the darkest episodes in the island's history, the Kalinago Massacre of 1626. Under the guise of diplomacy, Warner and D.S. Nambuc invited the Kalinago leaders to a peace conference. Trusting their intentions, the Kalinago attended, only to be ambushed. Hundreds were killed in a coordinated attack, and survivors were hunted down in the following days. This calculated act of violence decimated the indigenous population on St. Kitts, leaving the settlers with unchallenged control. For the Kalinago, this massacre was not just a loss of life but the destruction of their culture and sovereignty on the islands they had called home for generations. The rise of colonization. With the Kalinago displaced, the English and French turned their attention to cultivating the land. Tobacco became the first major crop, but it was soon replaced by sugarcane, which promised far greater profits. The settlers began importing indentured servants from Europe to work the fields, laying the groundwork for an economic system that would later rely heavily on enslaved African labor. St. Kitts earned the title of the Mother Colony of the West Indies, serving as a model for European colonization throughout the Caribbean. However, the alliance between the English and French would not last. Their rivalry over control of the islands and their lucrative plantations would lead to further conflict and bloodshed. The legacy of the Kalinago. Though their presence was violently diminished, the Kalinago left an enduring legacy. Traces of their culture can still be found in the names of places, the archaeological remains of their settlements, and the resilience of their descendants, who continued to fight for survival on neighboring islands. As the settlers laid the foundations of their colonies, they unknowingly sowed the seeds of future conflicts, both among themselves and with the African laborers whose arrival would soon reshape the islands. Chapter 3. The Birth of Colonization. By the early 17th century, the Caribbean had become a focal point for European powers seeking wealth, influence, and strategic dominance. St. Kitts and Nevis, with their fertile lands and central location, emerged as valuable footholds in the region. However, the process of establishing European colonies was far from smooth. It was a tale of alliances, betrayal, and brutal exploitation that would leave an indelible mark on the islands. The first permanent settlers. The story of colonization on St. Kitts began in earnest in 1623 when Sir Thomas Warner, an English adventurer and former privateer, arrived on the island. Warner had been inspired by earlier accounts of the Caribbean's potential, and he envisioned St. Kitts as the perfect base for England's expansion in the New World. He brought with him a small group of settlers, determined to carve out a life on the island despite the risks posed by disease, isolation, and conflict with the indigenous Kalinago people. The settlers established their first community at Old Road Bay, on the western coast of the island. They cleared the land for farming, planting crops like tobacco and cassava, and built basic shelters from local materials. Life was harsh, but the settlers were driven by the promise of riches and the knowledge that they were part of England's growing colonial ambitions. The arrival of the French. In 1625, the French arrived on St. Kitts under the leadership of Pierre Bellin d'Esnambuc, a French nobleman and privateer. D'Esnambuc had been driven out of the island of St. Vincent by hostile forces and sought refuge on St. Kitts. Though initially hesitant, Warner saw an opportunity in forming an alliance with the French. Together, the English and French settlers divided the island into separate territories, agreeing to coexist and share its resources. This unlikely partnership marked the beginning of St. Kitts as a shared colony, a rare arrangement in the fiercely competitive world of European colonization. However, this cooperation was built on a fragile foundation of mutual convenience, and it would not take much to unravel the alliance. The early struggles of colonization. Life for the settlers on St. Kitts was fraught with challenges. Disease was rampant, with outbreaks of yellow fever, malaria, and dysentery decimating the population. The tropical climate, while ideal for agriculture, was unforgiving to unaccustomed Europeans. Food shortages were common, and the settlers had to rely on both imported supplies and their ability to cultivate the land. Conflict with the Kalinago added another layer of danger. Although the Kalinago had been weakened by the massacre of 1626, they continued to resist the settlers' encroachment. Periodic raids on European settlements kept the colonists in a constant state of vigilance. The rise of plantation agriculture. Despite these hardships, the settlers quickly recognized the economic potential of St. Kitts and Nevis. The island's volcanic soil and favorable climate made them ideal for growing cash crops. Initially, tobacco was the crop of choice, but it soon became clear that sugarcane was far more profitable. By the late 1620s, sugarcane cultivation began to take root on St. Kitts. The crop required large tracts of land, substantial labor, and significant investment, but the rewards were immense. Sugar became known as white gold, fueling the wealth of European powers and transforming the Caribbean into one of the world's most lucrative regions. To meet the labor demands of sugarcane cultivation, the settlers initially relied on indentured servants from Europe. These workers were often poor, desperate individuals who agreed to work for a set period in exchange for passage to the New World. However, the backbreaking labor and harsh conditions on the plantations led to high mortality rates among indentured servants, prompting the settlers to seek a more sustainable and exploitative labor source. The introduction of African slavery. By the mid-17th century, the settlers began importing enslaved Africans to work on their plantations. This marked a turning point in the history of St. Kitts and Nevis. The transatlantic slave trade brought thousands of Africans to the islands, where they were subjected to unimaginable suffering. They were forced to work long hours under brutal conditions, with little regard for their health or humanity. The introduction of African slavery reshaped the demographics, economy, and culture of the islands. The African population soon outnumbered the European settlers, creating a racially stratified society that would persist for centuries. Nevis, the sister colony. While St. Kitts served as the mother colony of the West Indies, Nevis quickly developed its own identity. Colonized by the English in 1628, Nevis became a center for sugar production and trade. Its sheltered harbors made it an important hub for ships traveling between Europe, Africa, and the Americas. Charlestown, the island's capital, grew into a bustling port, attracting merchants, traders, and adventurers. Nevis also gained a reputation as a social and cultural center. Wealthy planters built lavish estates, and the island became known for its elegant lifestyle. However, this wealth was built on the exploitation of enslaved Africans, whose labor sustained the economy. The fragility of alliances. The alliance between the English and French on St. Kitts began to unravel as both powers sought greater control over the island. By the 1630s, tensions had escalated into open conflict. The rivalry between England and France, which played out on battlefields across Europe, found its mirror in the Caribbean. Skirmishes between English and French settlers became increasingly common, further destabilizing the island. In 1666, during the Second Anglo-Dutch War, the French launched a major assault on the English settlements on St. Kitts, destroying crops and homes. Although the English eventually regained control, the conflict underscored the volatility of colonial alliances and the precariousness of life on the frontier. The foundation of empire. Despite the challenges and conflicts, St. Kitts and Nevis became key pillars of the burgeoning British Empire. The wealth generated by the sugar plantations fueled the expansion of British influence in the Caribbean and beyond. At the same time, the islands became symbols of the human cost of colonization, a legacy of exploitation, violence, and resilience that continues to shape their identity. Chapter 4: Sugar and Slavery. The Economic Engine. As the sun rose over the lush, green hills of St. Kitts and Nevis, its rays illuminated a landscape transformed by human ambition. The islands, once the homeland of the Kalinago and later the site of fledgling European colonies, had become dominated by the sprawling plantations of sugarcane. This new crop was more than just a plant. It was the lifeblood of the burgeoning Caribbean economy, the foundation of immense wealth for European powers, and the catalyst for one of history's darkest chapters, the transatlantic slave trade. The rise of sugarcane. A new economic order. In the early days of colonization, settlers on St. Kitts and Nevis experimented with a variety of crops, including tobacco, indigo, and cotton. However, these ventures proved less profitable than anticipated, particularly as tobacco production in the American colonies began to dominate European markets. The settlers turned to sugarcane, a crop that thrived in the Caribbean's tropical climate and volcanic soil. By the 1640s, sugarcane had become the primary crop of St. Kitts and Nevis. Its cultivation required large plantations, substantial capital investment, and a labor force capable of performing the grueling tasks of planting, harvesting, and processing. The sugarcane plant was not just labor-intensive. It was unforgiving. Workers toiled under the blazing Caribbean sun, cutting stalks with machetes and transporting them to mills for crushing. The labor-intensive nature of sugar production made it clear that the colonies needed more workers than the European indentured servants who initially formed the backbone of the labor force. Many of these indentured servants were unable to survive the harsh conditions, and those who completed their contracts often left for better opportunities. The solution, in the eyes of the European colonists, was the large-scale importation of enslaved Africans. The transatlantic slave trade. The transatlantic slave trade was a colossal system of human trafficking that forcibly transported millions of Africans to the Americas. St. Kitts and Nevis became integral nodes in this network, receiving ships filled with human cargo from the West African coast. These ships were part of the so-called triangular trade. European goods were sent to Africa, enslaved Africans were transported to the Americas, and sugar and other commodities were shipped back to Europe. The enslaved Africans brought to St. Kitts and Nevis endured a harrowing journey known as the Middle Passage. Packed into the holds of slave ships, they faced unspeakable conditions: overcrowding, disease, malnutrition, and abuse. Many did not survive the voyage, and those who did arrived weakened and traumatized. Once on the islands, enslaved Africans were sold at auctions to plantation owners. Families were often separated, and individuals were stripped of their identities, given new names, and subjected to lives of brutal labor. The work on sugar plantations was relentless and dangerous. Enslaved workers labored from dawn to dusk, cutting cane, feeding stalks into mills, and boiling the juice into sugar. The mills, often powered by wind or animal labor, were perilous machines that claimed many lives. Life on the plantations. The lives of enslaved Africans on the sugar plantations of St. Kitts and Nevis were defined by exploitation, violence, and dehumanization. Enslaved individuals were treated as property, their worth measured by their ability to produce wealth for their owners. They lived in rudimentary huts, often in overcrowded conditions, and received meager rations of food. Healthcare was virtually non-existent, and those who fell ill or were injured were often left to suffer or die. Despite these hardships, enslaved Africans preserved aspects of their culture and resisted dehumanization in myriad ways. They sang songs, told stories, and practiced spiritual traditions, creating a sense of community and identity. These cultural practices were acts of defiance, preserving a humanity that the system sought to erase. Resistance and rebellion. The history of sugar and slavery in St. Kitts and Nevis is also a history of resistance. Enslaved Africans resisted their oppression in both subtle and overt ways. Acts of defiance included working slowly, sabotaging equipment, and escaping to form communities of Maroons, runaway slaves who established independent settlements in the mountains and forests. There were also organized uprisings. One of the most significant revolts occurred in 1834, during the final years of slavery. Though ultimately suppressed, these acts of rebellion sent a clear message. The enslaved people of St. Kitts and Nevis were not passive victims but active agents in their struggle for freedom. The role of sugar in global trade. The sugar produced on the plantations of St. Kitts and Nevis fueled a global economy. It was shipped to Europe, where it became a staple commodity, sweetening tea and coffee and serving as a luxury item for the wealthy. The profits from sugar enriched European merchants, planters, and governments, funding further colonial expansion and industrial development. At the same time, the human cost of sugar production was immense. The labor of enslaved Africans generated immense wealth for the colonists, but it came at the expense of countless lives. The islands themselves bore the scars of this exploitation. The once diverse landscape was transformed into monocultural plantations, and the social fabric of the islands was shaped by the inequalities of race and power. The path to abolition. By the late 18th century, the horrors of slavery began to draw increasing attention from abolitionists in Europe and the Americas. Campaigns to end the transatlantic slave trade gained momentum, fueled by first-hand accounts of the atrocities committed on plantations. In 1807, the British Parliament passed the Abolition of the Slave Trade Act, which banned the transportation of enslaved Africans to British colonies. However, slavery itself persisted on St. Kitts and Nevis until 1834, when the Slavery Abolition Act was enacted. Even then, enslaved individuals were forced into a system of apprenticeship, which required them to continue working for their former owners for several years. Full emancipation was not achieved until 1838. Legacy of sugar and slavery. The legacy of sugar and slavery on St. Kitts and Nevis is profound. The island's economy, culture, and demographics were irrevocably shaped by this period. Today, the scars of slavery are visible in the descendants of the enslaved, who form the majority of the population, and in the plantation ruins that dot the landscape. The story of sugar and slavery is one of both immense suffering and extraordinary resilience. It is a reminder of the human capacity for endurance and the unyielding spirit of those who fought for freedom in the face of unimaginable oppression.